for our city. This is the FC Buffalo Show on 91.3 FM, WBNY. Now, from the WBNY studio, here are your hosts, Ben Tsujimoto and Nick Mandola.
Look at you rocking out there.
I play the drums, I slap the bass. I'm hanging out here for the Football Club of Buffalo show. I'm Nick Mandola from NBC Sports Soccer and FC Buffalo. Joined by Ben Tsujimoto from soccer.buffalonews.com or BN underscore soccer if you're a tweeter for the Twitters. Derek Kramer behind the board. Super excited to be back here. Still a little injured. Still a lot of stuff to talk about and some interesting stuff going on today. We're going to have Andrew Coughlin, former FC Buffalo, Canisius, Syracuse goalkeeper, now plying his trade in the indoor game with the Syracuse Silver Knights. And excited to have a conversation with him. Good man. Also, assistant coach of the Park High School girls varsity soccer team, which I think is what most people know him for.
Wow. I had no idea that was the case.
Yeah. I think most people know him for that, doing great work with all-league second-team goalkeeper Kelly Rogers.
I've also seen him training goalies at Sportsplex.
Well, there you have it. He's always working. Let's stay positive. Let's get away from the nevers and the nots. I wanted to begin here, though. The Copa America Centenario, Ben.
I have strong feelings about this, Nick. Very strong feelings. You can continue your intro, but get excited.
No, very excited to talk about this because the United States has a group. We know their opponents now for the group stage. A group stage they will largely be expected to escape from. And the United States will face Paraguay. I'm going to cut this off. I always have a lot of fun listening to whenever they do a draw that's hosted by someone who's of Hispanic heritage. Mm. They really get nuts with the excellent pronunciation. Paraguay! Like, very harsh.
It's like that high-pitched?
A way I could never say it. I could never get away with saying Paraguay that way. Like, Max Bredos used to drive me nuts when he was on Fox Soccer. Does a great job at ESPN now. When he was on Fox Soccer, he would say every foreign word in the accent.
Oh, boy.
Which is polite, but it would always kind of drive me nuts a little bit. As it turns out, he's fantastic. He's a very good personality in the soccer world. So Paraguay, Costa Rica, and Colombia will be the opponents. Colombia first, which is probably the biggest bummer of the whole bunch.
June 3rd.
Yeah, because we will be in Detroit.
Oh.
Taking on Detroit City that night, so we will miss some of that game.
That's disappointing.
It'll be key worth it, is all all I have to say about that. So very excited, though, for this group. Ben, you said you have thoughts about this.
Yeah, and initially I thought, upon seeing the draw, that there's no way the U.S. is going to get out of this. This is the group of death, and those were my initial thoughts, and I've softened a little bit after reading MLSsoccer.com's Matthew Doyle's take on this, where he basically said the U.S. is in a really good position. All these teams are overrated that they're playing against. Granted, I'm paraphrasing this considerably. But the U.S. shouldn't worry about Colombia because their stars are very inconsistent. The U.S. has played against Costa Rica and beaten Costa Rica in the past. They can't really count on their offense either. And Paraguay is also they're the lowest FIFA-ranked team in this group.
Right.
So after reading what he thought, I sort of balanced the two together and said, well, let's look at this USA team that we have. Is this still the Gold Cup team, the one that lost to Jamaica, the one that lost to Panama, the one that had a massive, massive match against Mexico and lost that one as well? Are we still talking about that team? And if we are still talking about that team, I don't think that team advances.
You have to remember, and it's almost one of those things where I wish we could call Matt Doyle right now, because I don't want to sound like I'm saying this behind his back, but he has an agenda. Mm-hmm. He hates Klinsmann, and so you're seeing a lot of people responding to this group by saying, don't call it a group of death. And even if you do, that's no excuse. I saw Doyle, and I call him by his last name, like we're friends now, but I saw he tweeted that Paraguay hadn't beaten a team in the top 40 in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And that's a really good stat, except they drew Argentina, Chile, Brazil, and Argentina again in the last 5 months.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's that. To me, is absolutely meaningless.
Yep, you can pick your stats to prove a point.
Right, and you absolutely can. You can say, if he wanted to maybe double down and be very cheeky, he could say, well, the United States can beat Germany and Netherlands on the road, then they can beat every team in this tournament.
Yeah.
The U.S. got a pretty tricky draw.
Yeah, it's. I think it's very difficult, and obviously just like the U.S. playing Ghana in the first game of the World Cup, the U.S. Colombia game will really be the barometer that sets the tone for this tournament. And it's interesting because U.S. faces teams essentially in order of most difficult to easiest. If you look, Colombia, Costa Rica, and Paraguay, and so much of it hinges on, like, if they lose to Colombia and draw Costa Rica, like, there's real worries heading into that last match. And
assuming Costa Rica wins their game against Paraguay.
Right, yeah. But what are you thinking about this? Do you think this is a group of death? Are you really afraid that the U.S. won't advance?
Oh, I put it this way. If you believe that in every tournament there is a group of death, then I think this is close to the group of death. The Mexico group is tricky because Jamaica has played very, very well.
Mm-hmm. And Uruguay as well.
Yes. Paraguay, however, drew Costa Rica 0-0 in that same run of games where they had a bunch of draws. So to me, this is pretty tricky. And I'm going to want to see – you're probably going to want to see a draw coming out of that first game. Not for the United States. You want to see anything coming out of that game. I mean for Paraguay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. for Paraguay and Costa Rica. And that's an interesting matchup being played in Orlando. The U.S. playing in California, I don't think that makes much of a difference. I don't think it'll make much of a difference either way. Colombia is going to be bringing a pretty great crew around. I wonder if the sidebar here, I wonder if the rivalry might get ratcheted up a little bit by the Olympic playoff between Colombia and the United States next month.
For sure.
So where we'll get a preview of some of those players who may be playing in both games. I think they should escape. I think they should get out of the group. It comes down to the United States and Costa Rica. Colombia will probably beat Paraguay, but there's always the same way that the other teams are probably looking at the United States and Costa Rica. There's some familiarity there. There's a sense where you might be able to play that team a little tighter.
Nick, looking down this Colombia, so MLS Soccer did a really good job previewing all of the teams that are participating in Copa America. They have everything from the manager, three stars to watch, and they also have a projected starting 11 for the teams. For Colombia, these are the respective clubs from which all these players are coming from. Arsenal, PSV Eindhoven, AC Milan, Inter Milan, Boca Juniors, Aston Villa, Real Madrid, AC Milan, Sampdoria.
Mm-hmm.
You go down the U.S. list, and you have unattached Jermaine Jones. You have very... And granted, I just picked that one because it was the most damning, essentially. But
well, to be fair, he is. It's not the most damning because he is unattached because he's got an 8-game. Somebody signs him, that he has to sit out 8 games.
Right. So it's still kind of damning.
He would be in Germany right now, I'm confident, if that wasn't hanging over his head. But still.
And look at that side. I mean, James Rodriguez, basically everybody has heard of for Colombia. Carlos Bacca is a name that I think majority of soccer
AC
fans
Milan.
Are familiar with.
Is it where is he now though?
He's still at AC Milan.
Still AC Milan.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's and David Ospina from Arsenal. People will remember when he challenged for that job.
Newcastle goalkeeper.
So there's a lot to worry about. And Costa Rica, I mean, I guess U.S. fans are fairly familiar with them. Brian Ruiz, a guy who I know you've spoken very highly of in the past.
Yeah, it was a man without a home a little bit. It's one of those. I don't know. I get pretty defensive. It's funny, I'm not a Jurgen Klinsmann believer, but the more I hear people bash him, I'm in his corner. Not just because, and look, I'm wearing my U.S. jersey today. Yeah,
you are.
But not just because I want my national team to win, and arguably, my co-owner and I, Scott Fraunhofer, have this, at FC Buffalo, have this conversation a lot. I would choose United States success over any club I support. I would rather see that. Here in our country, there's still a rallying point behind that. And I look, we haven't seen, the one thing that makes me nervous is we haven't seen the United States together in a while because we're coming off of this experimental cycle that included in January with the traditional January camp. You'll feel a lot better about these games if the United States just crushes Guatemala with a full strength roster, more or less, at the end of next month. I think they get through. And I think Colombia gets through. I think it's almost as simple as that. But when I look at the United States roster and I think about the players and where they're at, there's a very interesting situation in goal right now. Klinsmann came out today and said it will be either Brad Guzan or Tim Howard starting in net, despite the fact that neither is currently the number one at their club.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty interesting. And it tells you how he feels about that next level of goalkeeper.
And I'm not sure really there's any other option, right? Who's the one
David
after
Bingham has a good chance of being the third one called up. But he'll be out of season as well.
On the merits of one match, too.
On the merits of one match and...
and training.
Yeah, and Bill Hamid being injured.
Yes.
That's a big part of it. There are a few teams also in that window in MLS who play. I don't remember. The Red Bulls are one of them. And so I think you'll see...
Luis Robles.
Yeah, I think you'll see him avoid that. But, you know, Matt Miazga may end up getting regular playing time now with Chelsea as... gentleman who's their coach, Goose Hiddink, said, we're going to focus on the FA Cup now.
Mm-hmm.
And even maybe ahead of the Champions League. So in the Premier League, they're going to go with young players.
And he might be the last man standing anyhow. He might be starting important matches. There was a Miazga alert the other day. You know, he was on the bench for a match.
Yeah, he has been the last couple on the bench as they brought Ivanovic inside. But I think that's going to be the biggest problem for Miazga is Ivanovic has come inside and played pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
He's not
better than he played outside.
He's not fast enough. He lost that step to play outside. So I think they get through. I really do. I don't think that will be a problem. And I look forward to kind of seeing where they stack up. They won't be comfortable wins. If they beat Paraguay, if they beat Costa Rica. This is a select tournament, and people forget that. It's hard. The CONMEBOL teams all make it, right? But it's not and everybody gets in. Like, we just watched the U.S. women in Olympic qualifying just batter pretty much everyone they played because they are the cream of the crop, them in Canada, in that region. This is, you know, the four best teams from that region. Six teams from CONCACAF made it, right?
Mm-hmm.
A full pot in that. So that will be something to monitor.
One thing to look at, too, and this is, you know, kind of something to keep in the back of your mind, MLS Soccer also has the projected starting 11 for the U.S., and they have a bit of a typo there that says they're going to play a 4-2-2. I don't think that will work out in their favor. But you have Tim Howard in goal as their projection. Their back four is DeAndre Yedlin, Jeff Cameron, John Anthony Brooks, and Tim Ream. Mm. Their midfield is Alejandro Bedoya, Jermaine Jones, Michael Bradley, and Fabian Johnson. And their strikers up top are Clint Dempsey and Jozy Altidore. So the Yedlin Ream thing has me a lot worried there.
I think Ream is solid. People keep talking about, and rightfully so, it's very interesting, Klinsmann playing players out of position, right? He plays center backs. He's arguably gone for this almost giant German, let's play all 6-5 guys across the back in recent games. And Yedlin is obviously switching that up. He did a decent job the other day when he was whistled for diving. I can't remember what game that was. Might have been Liverpool. But I think what's interesting there is... he wants to give all the players in front of the back four kind of free reign. He puts a guy like Bedoya up there. Johnson's obviously been phenomenal. He knows Jones is going to come back. He knows Bradley's going to come back. So he's kind of got this situation where he can play just responsible, big, tough center backs. He can play in front of them guys who are going to be box-to-box guys. And that's kind of the interesting thing about playing both Jones and Bradley is they both have offensive acumen, but they're also both relentless.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no worry about them tracking back. And Dempsey can kind of drop in and be that 4-5-1, right? It's not always a straight 4-4-2. So that's interesting to me.
And what is Jeff Cameron anymore? Is he a center back? Is he a holding midfielder? Do we really know what he is?
I think Jeff Cameron, I can speak to this with a pretty decent sense of confidence. Jeff Cameron views himself as a holding midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
Stoke knows Cameron wants to play as a holding midfielder, and Mark Hughes is letting him. And I think Cameron fits kind of just below Bradley and...
Jones?
No, not positionally, but he sits right below Bradley in terms of importance. And Fabian Johnson is the other guy I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Because when he went out for Stoke, after playing nearly every minute of the year for them, they immediately started losing and hemorrhaging goals. I want to say they had 2 or 3 3-0 losses in a row. But we will talk more about that in a minute because we will talk to someone who rarely, if ever, hemorrhages goals, and that is the Syracuse Silver Knights backstop, former Syracuse Orange, Canisius College, I want to say Reading United, and FC Buffalo goalkeeper Andrew Coughlin from Baldwinsville, New York. Andrew, how are you?
I'm good, Nick. How are you?
Did I catch all your clubs there?
Yeah, it was Vermont Voltage, not Reading.
Oh, okay, okay.
Ooh, unbelievable, Nick.
V squared. Was it fun out there in Vermont? Did you enjoy it at all?
Yeah, it was a good time, good experience. Cool. Beautiful state, so.
Did you run into Bernie Sanders?
I did not.
No, weird. I heard he frequents the Voltage games. So what's going on, man? Congratulations. Obviously a great start to your indoor career, and what an incredible challenge that must have been to kind of go from, you're a commander, man. I mean, you sit back there and you organize a team, and now they just shrunk the field on you. What was that like?
Yeah, you know, it was definitely different. It's a crazy atmosphere, and, you know, I was thrown right in the thick of it, not knowing a lot of the rules and, you know, not really training full-time with the team, you know, every day, getting to know everybody, you know, strengths and weaknesses. So, you know, I was thrown right into the thick of it, and to be fair, the guys helped me out more than I can thank them for. So, but yeah, it's been fun.
Andrew, are you still sort of riding off the momentum of that first weekend, that dramatic win over St. Louis and then the win over Baltimore? It seems like that really got you like an injection of positivity, of confidence starting out your MASL career.
I wouldn't say I'm riding on it. I would say that definitely was a time where I learned all the rules, and you know, I got to see every kind of facet of the game going all the way into a shootout too. So, but yeah, no, I think now it's just, you know, after that, yeah, I realized, okay, I can actually play in this league and, you know, I can get some results. So now it's just, yeah, it's just now I'm confident in my abilities.
What are some of the specific things that you're learning that's maybe different about the indoor game than as opposed to playing outdoor?
You never waste time in the indoor game ever. And, you know, I've been yelled at a lot in college and by other coaches, not my own coach, about how to, you know, kill off a game and, you know, secure a 1-0 victory. It's not the same in indoor. As soon as you make a save, you got to pop right back up and look for someone shooting down the field. And, if you don't, you'll get an earful from a lot of your guys. So, that's one of the big differences. And the other thing too, is that, you know, you're just facing, you know, shots from within your six almost every 5 seconds. And it's just, you got to react. And it's more about reactions than anything else. So it's exciting though.
Andrew, I think about when I played hockey growing up, the difference between playing on ice and roller hockey. You actually have like a different sort of soreness. Were there like one of those moments where you're like, wow, these are muscles I haven't used in a while? Because it's a frenetic game. For those who haven't experienced it, the indoor is, there's like a breakneck sort of, I don't want to say speed, but just back and forth ping pong to it at times.
Yeah, no. Well, especially because we play on top of an ice rink, so we have the turf rolled right out on top of the ice. So you're not hitting a soft grass pitch; you're hitting, you know, basically AstroTurf on top of ice. So I was definitely sore, some soreness I haven't felt, you know, ever. But, you know, it's a lot of the same stuff, reaction time and, you know, like for me now, it's all muscle memory. So thankfully my muscles have worked up enough strength where I'm not as sore after games, especially because it's not, you know, it's not a 90-minute game. It's a 60-minute game with a ton of breaks. So, but I definitely think there's a lot of soreness that comes from just hitting the hard surface for sure.
How difficult is it to get acclimated to the bounces off the walls, the ricochets, just the, and sometimes it can be unpredictable, right? Like that's part of the challenge and part of the beauty of the indoor game.
Yeah, you know, hopefully the person passing the ball knows where it's going. For me, that's the part of my game that I still need to work on the most is, you know, balls coming off the boards and, you know, reading the angles and making sure my positioning is right. And, you know, I've been working a lot with Brian O'Quinn, who's back now from his injury, but been working with him trying to say, okay, you know, in this situation, what do I do? Or in this situation, how should I approach it? And, you know, him and a bunch of other guys, Doug Miller, they've all been very, very helpful in helping me with that.
You talked a little bit to me before when we did an article for the News of Soccer blog about Doug Miller's first couple interactions with you. And can you explain what your relationship has been like with Doug? Because Doug's a guy who Buffalo soccer fans will look back and think of, oh, the Buffalo Blizzard, he's been around soccer forever, he's now playing in his mid-40s and he's still somehow contributing. What was your relationship been like with him?
Well, I mean, he's, you know, he's more or less another coach on our team. So, you know, it's not, you know, he says to do something, you do it kind of thing. So, and that's, you know, I've had a lot of success with that, so I'm going to keep sticking with that.
And Tommy Tanner, too, you said he's a guy who's been, who you've known for a long time growing up in the Syracuse area. What has he been for you, too? Has he been a pretty good guidance?
Yeah, no, for sure. He, you know, making a lot of mistakes in my first couple games, but he's always, you know, after the game or during the timeouts, he's pulled me aside and say, listen, you should do this instead. You know, there was one time last game that I was playing in, actually, where, you know, they kept giving me this one lane down the boards, and so I kept playing that ball, but then they started to cut it off and started to intercept it more and more. So he pulled me aside and say, listen, now when you get that ball, you should try to look for the diagonal. It's on because now they're sending these players over to the boards. So he's been super helpful too.
Looking at Syracuse's record, you guys sit at 9-8 now. There's only a couple games left in the year. You're, I believe, one game up on Detroit for second place in your division. So what do the next three games mean? It seems like you're already sort of set into what your playoff matchup's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, the playoff picture's been set for a while. But these next three games are time for us to get everybody back from injury and, you know, to get our squad back to full health and kind of become a well-oiled machine. Just, you know, operating on all all cylinders, just going. And, you know, I think that's what we'll definitely use these next few games for sure.
How much are you thinking about outdoor, too? I know you were thinking about, like, lining up tryouts and seeing what other opportunities were out there for the outdoor season. Is there anything, any kind of progress as far as that goes?
Yeah, I'm currently at a preseason right now. Actually just started today, so we'll see. I mean, it's an exciting experience. You know, there's definitely a lot of skilled players out there, but, you know, it's the dream. So, you know, I'm just going to work my butt off until I can see it, you know, come to life.
Can you say what preseason you're at?
I'm actually down in Harrisburg, yeah.
Oh, really? Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you what, Andrew, obviously we've been a big, you know, believer in you from back in the club, but what's been interesting is, have you had a chance to really, at any point since your college season ended, sit back and look at those 4 years, sit back and look at the crazy ride that you had been on in terms of, you know, rising through the ranks, becoming what should have been an all-conference goalkeeper? I don't mean to put salt in the wound, but there's no doubt about it. You were at that level of some of the other players in your conference. Have you sat back and kind of looked at some of the highs that you had and come to appreciate what college soccer was?
Definitely. You know, as soon as it was over, I kind of, you know, I would talk to my roommates and even my parents just about, like, because, you know, my parents, you know, they'd be out at every game with the big heads. But, you know, so they were kind of upset because they didn't know what was in store, what was the next step. So we definitely talked about it. And, you know, I wouldn't have done it any other way, to be honest. I think that starting out at Syracuse under, you know, the great coaches that are there and training alongside one of the best goalkeepers in college soccer at the time, I think that really, you know, helped shape me into, you know, the keeper I am now. And then going on to Canisius to play and, you know, finally show what I was made of and, you know, lead a team. I think that, you know, I think that I wouldn't go about it any other way. I enjoyed what, you know, had gone on and I liked exactly how, you know, everything fell into place.
I have to think about the camaraderie too. You're talking about Alex, who's was with Toronto FC and you have people that you can go because of your connections, because of your career now. You know, you can ask that conversation about how does a guy who's been capped by the Olympic team by the national team get used to being, you know, not always a number one, get used to having to fight his way back to the top. And you've certainly had that experience as well. I wonder how much players your age who know each other that well, who are all striving for the same goals and the professional rank. I mean, do you guys talk about that stuff? Do you share lessons you learned, or is it more of an individual thing?
Well, I definitely think, like, you know, everybody that I played with, I want them, you know, I wish them all the success in the world. You know, it's unfortunate if we play the same position because then I've got them for your spot. But no, I think, you know, we reached a point where, you know, we would talk to each other and say, like, you know, how's this going? How's this you know, working out for you and even kind of train together sometimes too, because, you know, we weren't competing for the same spot anymore. So we just want to see the best in each other. And, you know, I think that's all that everybody really wants is just to see everyone succeed and, you know, see themselves succeed as well.
Yeah.
So.
And the goalie position as well is tricky because you can see, I think about, now I'm totally blanking on his name. Steve Harper was at Newcastle behind Shea Given for something like 10 years. And when he dropped off, he went in and started pretty much every game for them for two seasons. The position is the most difficult one to break into as well. There's not a, you know, if you're a terrific center back, you might have a coach say, let's try you at right back. You don't get that look at goalkeeper. So you have to be almost the most patient kind of professional, something we learned from another kid out of Buffalo, the Bobby Shuttleworth story, who had to wait 3-4 years in New England and wonder what his next step's going to be. Well, his next step is the full-time starter for the last half decade. So
yeah.
Goalkeeping in general, you have to be a patient dude.
Well, definitely. And I think, you know, it's you got to be a good teammate too. You know,
yeah.
As bad as you want to be on the field and playing, you know, you gotta know your role. And when your opportunity, you know, comes and knocks on your door, then, you know, be ready to take it. But you got to be a great teammate, and you got to kind of, you know, you can't wish your team to lose just so you can get in. You got to, you know, want success and then hopefully be a part of that, you know, when your time comes.
Well, Koff, we're extremely happy to have you and to follow your career. We can't wait to see what's next, and we know what's going to click for you. So thanks for keeping us posted and checking in. And again, we'll be following along and go Silver Knights.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
That's Andrew Coughlin. Longtime goalkeeper for a whole lot of people. Ben, seriously, you mentioned the question with Guzan and Howard, right? I mean, that's the thing. How many goalkeepers for the United States national team even have had to kind of sit there and just be, you know, a good teammate and learn from the best and take that back to their club? It's one position I'm happy I don't play, mostly because I'm short and a lot of goals would be scored on me, but for a number of reasons. So, yeah, it's Andrew Coughlin was our guest. I think we'll take our break now. DK, we good? Is it about time? Yeah. Yeah. Produce it up there, Kramer. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Lots to talk about. FA Cup set. Champions League massive game tomorrow. Really can't wait to watch that one. We'll reflect on the week that was and look forward to a lot of stuff going on in the world of professional soccer and an FC Buffalo update as well when we get back here on WBNY. What's happening, Captain? Nick Mendola here along with Ben Tsujimoto, Derek Kramer, beyond the boards. The sound boards, that is. Not the indoor boards of the MASL? Is it MASL now?
Major Arena Soccer League.
Major Arena Soccer League. And thanks again to Andrew Coughlin for joining us. Fantastic kid. Kid. He's like 23 now. Fantastic goalkeeper. I mean, you know a guy from the time he's 18, 19 that throws you off a bit.
It's true. He first popped into the scene, in 2013, was it?
2013. Murph's first year. He's split time with Kareem Gray between the sticks for FC Buffalo.
Mm.
So Empire United kid, that was one of the things we failed to mention. But.
And he started in FC Buffalo's last playoff match.
Mm, he did start in that game. Mm. I was going to mention this to Koff during the interview, and I failed to for a number of reasons. I was thinking about him today. So what happened was FC Buffalo was going to announce a boatload of players today. We had 19. We have 19 ready to go, but we're on the verge of that basically having it all firmed up, 25, 26, 27.
Oh, I thought you were going to say of signing Adriano.
No, yes. Mm. No, we're going to sign Romario. But
Well, there's a breaking.
Yeah, breaking news.
I'm going to tweet that out right now.
Yeah, you should. But the, you know, what was kind of interesting is I thought, well, who should we get? You know, should we get Chris Walter? Nah, we'll get him another time later in the year.
Chris Walter just won the Winter Cup this weekend, so now is a good time.
Could have had him.
Now a good time to talk to him.
He's riding high.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, I said, well, what about Coughlin? And I thought, what is my enduring memory of Andrew? And I thought about how literally he should have the, if you really think about it, he should have the moment in club history right now. He should. When he stopped the PK against Cleveland in the game that lost 3-2.
Oh, yes.
I stood up in the press box because there weren't too many other people in there and the window and the windows were closed and just let forth a string of expletives that were attached to Andrew. Like, there you go, Andrew. Mm. And with you know, less verbs.
So good expletives.
Good expletives. Yeah, I mean, that was, I have to say that in moments of sheer joy, even like watching people storm the field the first time we beat Erie. By the way, one of their old players is online still like talking about how we never beat Erie, which is...
That'd be Billy Colton.
Yeah, he's hysterical and a loser. But you're right. We never do except once a year, you know? But, I looked at it and I thought, that should have been the moment. I mean, that was an electric time, an incredible save. And it shows you kind of what it takes to be a keeper, to have your head about you at that time when everyone else is just losing their minds. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, the stadium was as vocal, as angry at a ref as I've ever seen. I was at a wedding reception, Ben, on Saturday night, and there was an FC Buffalo supporter there, and he talked about how he brought two sports fan friends to the game. They have never seen soccer. But when he brings up that game with them, they still talk about how intense and how they'll be coming back because of that.
It had more of a buzz than, I think, even as somebody who's an objective observer, it had more of a buzz than I remember feeling since maybe Erie matches, and probably even more than the times when FC Buffalo has played Detroit City, too.
Sure, and it started late.
It started late. There's suspense, yeah.
Cleveland apparently leaving 2 hours before the game and having their bus break. So, yeah, it was... to me, I still think about that. I mean, I think we all dwell on that game because if we win and we're in, and you know, we didn't do enough to get the job done, but it was such an incredible moment there when Koff made that save.
And Nick is a guy who sometimes forgets to turn his mic off during FC Buffalo games. I'm glad you had it off
on purpose
on that moment.
On purpose. I used to. I have to admit something that in the past, from time to time. You know, early years with a couple hundred people there.
Oh, tactical. I didn't realize it was tactical.
I may have tactically left the mic on. I haven't done that in a few years, though.
I view this entirely differently now.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, I'm a competitor.
Yeah, I should have figured, though. Knowing your BDSL antics, I should have figured.
I do not have BDSL antics. Unsure about that. Anyway, so Champions League tomorrow. Two absolutely out-of-this-world massive games. Mm. And it's... I wrote this today... Actually, it literally just went up at Pro Soccer Talk.
this is what Nick does during his breaks.
Yeah, got to do it. Got to be ready to go. It's not often that you would look at Arsenal playing a game with relatively good health and say, wow, this is a tall ask for them. Mm. You know, a club of Arsenal's size. But Barcelona, the first leg being at the Emirates tomorrow of the Champions League round of 16, hey, don't give up any of those valuable road goals, but you also need to win because the second leg's at the Camp Nou. Absolutely makes me wonder if we aren't better off paying attention to Juve Bayern Munich, which is the other game going on at 2:45.
Yeah, why do they have to have them both at the same time? I mean, I realize that they always do that. That's right. Just the way it works. But
couldn't we trade one of the Wednesday games?
Right.
Right.
It's a good thing DVR exists, because like, what if you had to choose? Say we lived in a different reality.
Barcelona.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So yeah, there's no question you'd watch Arsenal.
I'm treasuring every moment to watch Lionel Messi play while he's in his prime.
Hmm.
By the way, younger than you think, I believe. Do you know how old Lionel Messi is?
29.
Yeah. Okay, he is. 28, excuse me. Not even 29. Yeah. But it feels like we've been watching him in his prime for
a rounding up.
Yeah.
Actually, I have no idea. That was a lucky guess.
He's a dynamo. So, yeah, I think this is, I would watch Barcelona, and I really enjoy watching Barcelona. It was close as I came to calling myself a supporter, as you're going to see. Juve at home. Interesting, right?
Which one's the closer match here? I think it's Juve and Bayern Munich.
Oh, yeah.
It's a
toss-up.
Yeah.
But Lewandowski is form, and see what Mueller did the other day.
Yeah, Mueller had that.
Holy smoke. One of the best goals I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's visually, maybe it doesn't carry the aesthetic, but what he actually had to do physically to not just chest the ball, the cross in, while going backwards, but keep it into a place where he could get it with an overhand kick. I'm not saying you're going to watch that goal over and over again, but the physical nature of what he had to do is stunning.
It's very difficult, but I mean, this is something that strikers dream about all the time and train all the time, you know?
Like, yes.
You're just messing around in your penalty box and somebody's, and Douglas Costa's serving you passes after practice, and you're doing that. You're taking things off the chest, you're hitting crazy side volleys, you're hitting a bicycle kick, you know. I mean, this is something that they work on.
Right.
But no, to do it in a match and in a match of importance, I think is definitely gives us some credit. Is it the best goal I've ever seen?
No.
I still think it's Roberto Carlos' goal for Brazil is one of the best goals I've ever
seen.
That
is the most wonderful visual goal. Mm-hmm. I would still have trouble calling that the best goal ever because it's from a dead ball. Mm-hmm. I think the best goal ever, you can rule out every dead ball. That's a different class of goal.
Ooh.
You wouldn't want to. If you want that spirit of inclusion, I understand.
Well, I mean,
it is 2016.
I look at it like it's a goal is a goal, right? So I mean,
right.
It's just as difficult to make a ball bend 5 feet like that.
Oh, for sure. And I love that goal. Mm-hmm. I watch that goal once a month.
Oh, really?
Well, whether
the second Tuesday.
I'm going to say whether it's put in front of you rather often.
Yeah, that's
is the
true.
Other part of it.
Yeah. That's the problem with Twitter is like. Those things pop up. It's like, oh, it's been 25 years and 3 days since this. That's a good reason to show it. You
well,
know?
There was a crazy Ben goal. Bend, not Ben. Did you see it? Did you catch it this weekend? It was from like a second tier.
I did see it.
That weird, crazy bend.
Yeah. Was that wind-aided? It was.
You
like,
feel like it would have to be.
Yes.
But maybe not.
It did two separate bends. It actually curled in and then veered away.
Yep.
Which was, it was sort of Roberto Carlosian. I don't even know what league that was in, but it was.
I can't remember, and I'm the one who posted it.
Oh, you're the one who
it. Was the Finnish, yeah. Maybe it was the Finnish League Cup. No, that was a different, that was a goal from beyond half. There have been a lot of great goals. The proliferation of goals on the internet, video goals, mm-hmm. is to the point where, I'll let this out, FC Buffalo has been scouting a batch of players who don't play domestically. And you ask them, Do you have game film? And like, we only have the highlights that are on TV because our club doesn't film the game. And it's like, oh. But at the same time, you're like, well, I guess I understand that to a certain level. So it's tricky like that. But we've seen so many fantastic goals in recent history that you wonder what we missed when balls were oblong. I mean, that's the other thing. That's the other thing I wonder about the Carlos goal is he able to do that with these perfectly engineered orbs that are in play now.
One thing that is memorable for me growing up is watching the end of the week, end of the Sunday show of that basically recapped all the goals of that week in the Premier League. And this is when Leeds was there, or Leeds were there, I should say, and like a whole host of teams that are no longer in the Premier League. But it was Lionel Bienvenu who was the host.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just they'd show all the goals from the weekend. So you'd see the ugly goals, the tap-ins, the deflections, but you'd also see two or three goals every weekend that you're like, wow, like as a kid, this is pretty cool because, you know, you'd go out and take your soccer ball and fail miserably to curl a ball at all, you know?
Yeah.
But and like also Eurosport growing up, they'd sell goal tapes, you know, all 3,000 goals from the 2001 EPL season. And my father and I would watch those, and it was just goal after goal after goal, and you started to appreciate how good guys like Dwight York and Andy Cole and just, I mean, those are the two Manchester United guys who jump off the top of my head, but that was also during the Bergkamp and Henry era mm-hmm. as well. So these were very special players scoring very special goals, so I can look back and think about them as I'm watching Dele Alli, you know, take a flick over somebody's head and hit it first time into the lower corner.
Henry is incredibly interesting figure for me to, and we'll get back to the Champions League in a moment, but he's an incredibly interesting figure for me to kind of reflect upon because I feel like he never, and I'm looking it up now, but I think he never threw up one of those like goal a game seasons that you see because even in Barcelona where it's, you know, traditionally considered to be, you're going to feast on some lower rung teams.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the way he looms in my soccer memory is like very few other players. And I can't help but wonder, he's definitely, you know, in the discussion for one of the most effective and aesthetically pleasing players of all time. But where does he fit? How do you judge players like that that have done so, so much, but challenge themselves, you know, at Arsenal, you weren't going to see in the early 90s, or I'm sorry, the early 2000s.
The early aughts.
Ben, you weren't going to see somebody drop 30 goals year after year after year.
Looking at, Henri's goal scoring record, you're right. It isn't all that impressive. You know, the 9 years that he spent with Arsenal scored 174 goals in 254 games, which
pretty much encompasses the prime years for him too.
Absolutely. Let's see, I was 22 through 30 when he was there, his age. And if you look at Messi's goal scoring rate, like, that's so much better than
it's dizzy.
Yeah, and Ronaldo as well. And I mean, that maybe probably speaks more to the accomplishments of Messi and Ronaldo, as well as an era where maybe there's less parity to some degree, or the same amount of parity, and there's just better teams. I'm not really sure.
I do think that there's been a jump within the last 15 years. And there was also maybe a down period, not a down period for Real Madrid and Barcelona, but a period of time where a Valencia loomed as a real threat. Mm-hmm. Villarreal, I want to say, won a UEFA Cup in the early part of the century. Atletico now is giving us some sense of that. Mm-hmm. Second place right now, six points back of Barca, I think. It's 7 points. Real is 7 points back.
Oh, Barca's really fallen off, huh?
No. Barca is...
That was a joke, yeah. Because last time we looked, Atletico Madrid was, a 1 or 2 points up.
So. Barca had its game in hand, though. That was the thing, and Barca clearly won that. They have not lost in 32 matches, including the Champions League.
I trust you for all your La Liga info, because that is one thing I'm just unable to keep up on.
October 5th was the last time they lost a game.
Oof.
They've also, and that's, I think that's the other thing that's so stunning about it, that might make them, if they were to win the Champions League this year, one of the best teams of all time. Because not only have this incredible run, like Juve was on a great run that just ended. They had like a 14-game winning streak, all wins, no ties, and they just drew a game. So now it's up for discussion. But Barca played 32 games inside of 4 months, 5 months. That is, to do that and not lose at all, to not have an off day in the Copa del Rey, to not have a champion. And they had Champions League group stage games that they didn't need to worry about. Like, I'll just throw out whatever 11 guys are around. Let's hand a start to whoever. And they're just not losing.
Yeah, and that team can win ugly, too. You know, sometimes when you think of teams with stars, that it can be easy when something goes awry for everybody to kind of fall down and pout and realize that, like, hey, it's maybe not just our day. But you're right. It is a pretty wild feat. But then you also have to think that they do have – you can make the case for the three of the four best players in the world.
Well, I just had this post go up, literally. So I will ask you your thoughts.
You are flying through posts.
No, I mean, this one was scheduled to go up.
Oh, okay. All right.
And the post is three key battles between Arsenal and Barcelona. Oh. It isn't a blueprint, per se, but I'm trying to think of what three things are going to be the telltale.
Please tell me you mentioned Thomas Rosicki.
Did not mention Thomas Rosicki.
This is disappointing. I'm not going to read it then.
What would you point to? And I'll get one out of the way so you don't have to use it.
Phew.
And that's MSN, as they call it now, the trio. I don't know why they go with that. Messi, Suarez, Neymar.
Oh.
And
first I've heard of
that. For me, it's about them against Arsenal's defensive midfield, because we know that their center backs are not fleet of foot there. Now, maybe they'll play Gabriel, I don't know, who is a little quicker. But to me, it's going to be about how they backtrack, who is playing that destroyer, that destructive type for Arsenal. Is it Bellerin?
Coquelin.
I get them confused all the time.
I would not put Bellerin there.
No, Coquelin. Actually, Bellerin, his advanced statistics as an outside back are the best in the Premier League. But yes, Coquelin, who had faced that long injury spell, is incredibly important. But getting away from stopping Messi, Suarez, Neymar, what do you see to that as a key?
I think goalkeeping is the key. I think better check in some ways is, I feel like Arsenal might have an edge in goal.
Not that the goalies are playing against each other.
Right.
But I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let's see, what else would I say? I mean, I think the big storyline is, does Arsenal have any chance at all of staying with, like you said, MSN? But how is Arsenal going to, like, what's possession going to be in this game?
Well, this is what I wonder, because Wenger has struggled. I think he has just 2 wins ever against Barcelona. Is the stat I saw today. And they've played a fair amount of times, even going back to Monaco. So it's not the same Barcelona team. To me, where it matters, what it really comes down to, and you and I have talked about this, the value of a coach.
Mm.
When is a manager important? Well, it's when you have this much talent on the field at one time. And Wenger's experience is a little better than Luis Enrique's. So
true.
Will we see them high pressure the backs? We see them, look, we're going to take our chances with Messi, Suarez, Neymar. We know they're probably going to score anyways. So the possession, when it's basically at any one of those other seven players, we're going to high-press the ball. We're going to high-press their backs and try and get it. Or do they do something that Wenger hates doing? And if he would never park the bus, but will they idle the bus?
I hope not, just for the good of soccer.
Well, and this is one of the reasons that I think we're in for a treat tomorrow.
Ooh.
I think Barca comes out of this, but tomorrow is going to be interesting. Barcelona is going to pick up a couple of road goals, but Ozil, who is, if he hasn't already, is on track to break the Premier League record for assists in a season. You will unlikely to see Gerard Piqué or Sergio Busquets yesterday.
Sergio. I was called that for a while.
You should have been. They have not had a clean sheet in a month because of some of the injuries they have. So this is the sort of game, and this is what I wrote it at soccer.nbcsports.com. I'll just tell you this. This game specifically is one where Arsene Wenger will regret not, quote, overspending, unquote, to bring in a pace merchant up top, one with more touch than Theo Walcott. I like Walcott as a winger. When they're forced to play him up top, you'll see him just kind of make a great run because he's so fast, and then kind of push that a little too far in front of him. If you could put Walcott and Giroud in the same player, Arsenal would be in great shape. And here's the thing. If you overspend, you can find that guy.
Yeah.
I think about a guy like, well, let's call him one of the most informed strikers in the world, but how is a guy like Lewandowski? He's just feasting with that Arsenal 5 behind him. And I think Arsenal's still missing Cazorla, who I like a lot. Cazorla is how you're supposed to say it, by the way.
I'm really interested to see how Alexis does against Barcelona because I feel like he's the player in tandem with Ozil who can really break down that Barcelona team.
Yeah.
And I don't think
he's been in a cold spell. This would be the time for him to stretch out of it.
Yeah, and he's coming back from injury. He's had only, maybe two or three matches in since he's come back. He has looked a little rusty, as you said. Like, he's still the guy who covers a lot of ground, but he doesn't quite seem to have to be in the flow, you know, with the players around him. But, you know, the more that I think about it and the more that I look at the two squads, I think Arsenal has more of a chance than I'm giving them credit for.
That's possible. I think you're right. I think they have more of a chance than I've been giving them credit for as well. And I think the kind of X factor with Alexis is this is a guy who's going to be as fired up as you've ever seen. Former Barcelona guy.
Yep.
Had a good record there from being with Chile. He's also, yes, Chile. Mm-hmm. From being with Chile, he has probably doesn't like Neymar, Brazil.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't like Suarez, Uruguay.
Yeah.
And probably doesn't like Messi, Argentina. So I think he's probably underrated, to be honest. For a player on the most supported team in the United States, which is statistically been shown to be Arsenal over the past few years, you don't hear a lot about Alexis Sanchez as one of the great players in the game.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's just because there are guys like Ozil and, I guess, well, Jack Wilshere was popular for a while, but yeah, I guess that was very short-lived as well. I mean, what Arsenal players do you think of other than Ozil, guys that are
just
beloved?
Ozil.
Just Ozil?
Just Ozil. I think they have some kind of over... I hate to say this because so many of the Buffalo Gooners are great FC Buffalo supporters. So
yes, yeah.
I'm always careful at how I phrase this.
You
but
got
they've got guys like Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Theo Walcott who probably get more credit because they're on Arsenal.
Yeah.
If they're on another team, I wonder if they're viewed the same way as Bradley or Sean Wright Phillips used to be viewed, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
Not to equate the two, but maybe we will be in a couple of years because are either one of those players on the verge of washing out of Arsenal? I have to wonder as Arsenal kind of looks at what they're doing. But I think of Sanchez last season, absolutely electric. Now I've got his stats up. 16 goals in the Premier League. In his first year in the Premier League, where we've seen people struggle, Ben. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this a lot after the Gareth Bale sale, the guys that Spurs brought in. 4 goals in cup games. 4 goals in Europe last year, 25 overall. And this year he's going through a slow stretch that is still see him score 3 and 5. He had an injury earlier this year. This seems to me like it could be a breakout fixture. And not to give too much hope to the Gooners out there, but, you know, Arsenal is probably due for a really good moment in Europe.
See, the thing is, if Arsenal does play a little bit more defensive? And what if they do play two holding mids? What if they do start?
Pretty smart. Well, I would call it smart against Barcelona.
But then they're going to have to sacrifice somebody. You know, you won't be able to play Ramsey, Alexis, Ozil, Giroud.
Sacrifice everybody. Somehow get out of there at 0-0, 1-1. Go to Barca knowing that a draw is going to do it for you if you score a goal.
Yeah.
I know that's not Wenger's style.
So it might be ugly tomorrow, is what you're saying?
I don't think he'll do it.
Oh, you don't think
he'll
do
it? I don't think he'll do it. I think he swears by it. You always would see when Arsenal plays Swansea, when Gary Monk was there, or when he, you know, against Roberto Martinez or Brendan Rodgers, Wenger would say, I love that we're playing a team. He would go out of his way to praise teams that wouldn't park the bus against him, which makes it easier as well. However, anybody who watched Manchester United against Shrewsbury Town today.
Strawberry Town. Yep.
They exposed a team from two leagues lower who was trying to park the bus.
It's hard not to root for teams that end in town, you know? Like,
yeah.
It gives that immediately, like, nostalgia, rustic feel. Like, oh, you guys came from Shrewsbury Town or Ipswich Town or...
I had this great moment during the game following it, and a tweet comes out from Shrewsbury Town. And they say, an incredible crowd today, 1,900 which were Manchester United fans. Incredible crowd of 9,700. Like, that was, and that was their...
Incredible crowd.
Yeah, that was their Rushmore, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, they're incredibly proud of that, and as well they should be, but you forget that the magic of the FA Cup, as they say, it's why so badly our goal with FC Buffalo to get into the U.S. Open Cup. You know, you want to be that team.
Yeah.
I want to be at all high. And, you know, we talked about it when we were playing the Brooklyn Italians in a qualifier and flew into New York City. And I remember talking about it with then FC Buffalo owner Brent Garner. You know, you win this game and you're probably playing the Rhinos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on what they have during the week, maybe somehow you all of a sudden, if the draw goes your way, and not that he's going to be coming to the game, but either Thierry Henry or, because at the time, because it would probably be the Red Bulls, mm-hmm. either Thierry Henry or Tim Cahill is walking into All High Stadium.
Wild.
You
man.
Know?
Absolutely.
I mean, you're
wild,
that
yeah.
you're not that far away because of the reach, yeah. the way they group the teams. So,
yeah. Wouldn't you have to probably go to New York?
Well, I would imagine what they do is, you see this in a lot of situations, even if you're drawn there, the Red Bulls, you know, call up and say, hey, you guys want $20,000 and
yeah.
your flights and hotels? And you're like, yes.
Yep.
We'll fund our season that way.
And
so.
That's not a big deal for them. Nick, I want to ask you, because we talked a little bit, or we at least led into Manchester United, Jesse Lingard. I'm trying to decide if Jesse Lingard is...
I'm so happy you're about to say this.
Is Adnan Januzaj, or if he is...
Oh, I think he's I think he's a more promising for England. He's just a bigger boy.
So is he the real deal, or is he just a Manchester United guy who's had a sharp string of games, who's playing with confidence, and you know there's some lethargy around him, but he realizes there's an opportunity there, and he seems to work well with Mata, and bang, now he seems to be clicking on all cylinders.
Well, you're making me do this right on the air. I've went into fantasy.premierleague.com.
Oh yeah.
You swung my favor here because I played my wild card this week.
Oh wow.
Just trying to crack into the top 25 before the end of the season, build some momentum for next year. And I had chosen Wahbi Khazri from Sunderland at $6 million over Lingard, and it sat open on my computer for like 5 minutes.
Khazri's up to $6 million?
Yeah. Oh, wow. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he was down at like 4.5 when he entered.
But I'm swapping him out right now for Jesse Lingard because he's 4.3 million pounds. I think Lingard can do a trick. The problem, and this works at a good time for him, because United in the past would have given him approximately 2 games to score 4 hat-tricks.
You know? Yeah, the old James Wilson thing. James Wilson was the other guy I was going to bring up as somebody who was prolific for a couple of games and you haven't seen him.
It was the last game of the season, I want to say, the year that they won it all. They had it clinched?
Yeah, they had it clinched, and he came out.
And he came out and had a hat trick, yeah.
And he just had, like, Manchester United supporters licking their chops at what could be the following year, you know, the next Ruud van Nistelrooy and
RVN.
What's happened since.
Interesting story from a friend of the show, I'll call him, Stu Riddle, the coach over at UB, mentioned that when either Western Michigan or another team in where he was from, where he lived for a while near Kalamazoo, when they opened their stadium, that, you know, Ruud van Nistelrooy was going to be here. Ruud van Nistelrooy appeared via video on the scoreboard.
Oh, okay.
So can you imagine, like, because word gets out, and even if it's honestly leaked that he's going to put a video on the scoreboard, at least 100 people are going to hear, Ru Van Nistelrooy's going to be in Kalamazoo.
Oh, yeah, the game of telephone.
Yeah, RVN at the zoo. Yeah. Parting thoughts, Ben Suju. Oh, go ahead. I have one as well, though.
Oh, you. Do you want to? Well, you seem to have your parting thought.
Yeah, well, my parting thought was just going to be we were going to have two players unveiled today to kind of. Actually, we were going to have like 19, but instead we pushed it off a week because last year we liked it. We released all of our players at once, and then we worked on bios over the next few days. I am thinking of this, though, Ben. So you will tune in next Monday for sure.
I will tune in.
And you'll be here. But I'm talking to the listeners.
Oh, okay.
I did think this. Love the idea of putting up like little pictures or like a little snippet of a video where you can't see any of the logos where somebody scores, because I thought it would drive you crazy and you would earnestly try to figure out where the players were from.
Oh boy, you're probably too right about that.
Yes, I'm doing it.
All right, have fun with that.
Your parting shot.
My parting shot. Congratulations to the Buffalo Soccer Council on another well-run tournament and Buffalo Winter Cup. Ran very smoothly. The same two teams who've been in the final the last 2 years were also in the final again. And Chris Walter, Ian Moritz, Joe Walter, and several others were the winners. So
that's almost unfair. I think they should have to break that team up.
You know,
two Moritz, two Walters. In the past, there's been three Walters. John Grabowski's on that team.
Yep.
I think there were four FC Buffalo players and an ex-FC Buffalo owner on that team. That,
you've clearly heard. Yeah,
I wanted to go, but, you know, my shoulder was falling off.
Yeah, well, I'm glad it's still sort of hinged on there.
All right, Kramer, go back.
Producer Derek butting in now, right at 5:59.
See ya, DK. See ya, world.